You're listening to the Kids Ministry Collective Podcast. Each episode of the KMC is designed to inform, encourage, and entertain those who love kids and serving kids ministry. We hope you'll enjoy today's podcast and maybe even learn a thing or two. Now let's join our team for this episode of the KMC.
Hey, thanks for joining us on the KMC podcast. This is a special episode that I feel very passionate about bringing to the community. And so it's going to be an awesome episode here. We're going to be talking about small church kid ministry. And what does that entail? And what are the challenges, the ups and downs for leaders who serve in small churches around our country? We know statistics show that most churches are 200 and under, 300 and under would be even generous in our country. And so the vast majority of children's ministry workers are serving in small churches and have challenges and are often overlooked. And so I've got two guys that I know are pretty passionate about this subject. And so I want to welcome Bill Gunter, Commander Bill, as he's known online. Welcome, Bill, to the KMC podcast again.
Have me. It's great to be here.
Awesome. And a great friend of mine, Infuse brother and brother in Christ. We've known each other for a few years. Jared Massey, who's in Illinois.
That's me. Hello.
Notice I didn't say Illinois.
I liked how you kept the S off. Thank you.
Well, let's dive in on this topic because I know I'm gonna go right to Bill first, because a lot of this came from you just sharing your heart and a Facebook group on the Kid Ministry Collective group, I believe it was, or somewhere else. Maybe it was on Twitter. But you hit a nerve that resonated with a lot of people. And I'm glad for that, because it's been something that's been on my heart for a little while. Not a little while, a long while. And that's, how do we help small church ministry people and get connected, not feel alone, get resourced, all those kind of things. But before we get too far, let's define what a small church looks like, because it's kind of funny sometimes when we say small church, what people think about. So Bill, what's your definition? And then we'll go to Jared to see if he agrees. But what's your guys' definition for small church?
When I generally talk about a small church, the stats when the people use, and they say like 250 people attending or less. Realistically, a lot of churches have 100 people total that are attending. But like I said, generally, if I'm doing a workshop at a conference, I'll look at the 250 mark and below, because like I said, I've done like a one in a small church workshop, and I had people there with 100 kids in the Awana Club and people there with 10 kids in the Awana Club. It isn't small, but it's small compared to other churches. So if I would be like 250 and under, is how I would define small churches in a broad base.
Okay. So Jared, how about you? Do you agree with that? Is that where you would put your definition?
Close. I'm a little bit different. I always say, I think there's two categories. I think your smallest churches, I always put them at 100 or under, which my church runs about 70 total people, 10 to 15 kids on a Sunday. Yeah, we've been running close to 20. So I say 100 and under is really your smallest category. And what I've noticed in conversations I've had with people and churches I've visited, there's a significant shift that happens once you hit the 100 average attendance mark. And then I see another shift, and this is where I differ just slightly from Bill. I see another shift that happens right around the 300 mark, where once you hit 300, processes just have to change. And so I say 300 and under is, I still consider that a small church, even though realistically, when you're talking about most churches are really under that 100 or fewer people. And so you're talking about churches that may have one kid show up on a Sunday morning. They may have 12 kids show up. And so you're talking about 120% difference, or however that mathematically works out. Percentages always throw me off, but that's why I pick those two numbers.
Okay. So all right, so we've got a general agreement then that, you know, we could figure that we could meet in the middle at say 200 to 250, you know, would be an ideal. But so as we're going through and as we start talking about this, obviously we've already started to raise some of the challenge. What do you guys feel like are some of the top challenges for kid ministry people that are serving in these small churches? Jared, let's bounce to you first. And then we'll talk about what we can, maybe some solutions for those, but let's talk about what are some of the challenges.
Sure. Well, obviously you have monetary issues. When you're talking about churches that small, finances are always going to be a struggle. Even if you're in a fairly affluent community, you're still going to have some money issues when you're talking about fewer than 100 people or fewer than 250 or wherever we're at in that mark. Your volunteers, you know, anything in a small church, you're going to be pulling from the same pool as your youth ministry, as your worship ministry, as every other ministry in the church is vying for those same few people, because let's face it, 90% of people aren't volunteering. And so you're really pulling from a very small group of people. So those are the two freebies. Those are easy. Okay. I think for me, one of the hardest struggles is inconsistency. And that's what I was hitting on earlier. In a big church, you can program. And even if there's a flux in your numbers, your programming doesn't have to change. But in my situation, I have to account for that one kid that may show up that week or the 20 kids that may show up that week. And I really have to write two programs. I really have to be prepared for both circumstances. And so all of my games, I have to have a contingency plan. I have to prepare for the big group. So I spend a lot of time preparing for kids that aren't going to show up sometimes. So I think the inconsistency on both your attendance levels and your volunteer base, it would be a major struggle that small churches, that we see in small churches that we don't see in big churches.
Okay. So Bill, what do you think are some of the challenges, top challenges for small church kid work men?
I'm going to dovetail off of Jeremy. I agree with what he says. I mean, it's finances, it's volunteer base that you've got to pull from, and also numbers. Like I said, you may have one, you may have 20 on any given time. The one thing I found was my biggest struggle was the mindset of the people and the mindset of the volunteers, to get them used to, if you only have one show up, do the best you have with them, be prepared no matter how many people show up. Getting that mindset, and then you have the families that come in who may not want to be the only child in your kid's ministry. Nope. Your volunteers through, you know, have them spend a night out if it's just their child, when your volunteers are ready to do that, and I've got examples of that. Comes the mindset of your volunteers to be ready for whoever's there, not being discouraged, and not making phone calls to see who's coming. With young kids, parents, I had youth that would call each other and say, "Hey, are you going to be there?" "No, I'm not." And a youth leader that said, "Well, nobody's going to be here. I don't need a lesson." And that night, we had a couple of volunteers who showed up, and he had nothing for them. Nothing ready for them.
Wow.
So it's that mindset of always being ready for whoever might show up, because you never know.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you guys, because one of the things that just all of a sudden struck me is, do you feel like you're getting the curriculum, you know, because most of the time it's written for large churches. Even the supposed stuff that's written for small groups is still written for a small group of 5 to 10 kids. So do you feel like that's one of the struggles that small church kidmen have, is that they have to work extra hard on the curriculum, adapting the curriculum? I mean, we all adapt curriculum regardless of what church size we are. We'll say that right off the top. But do you feel like that's an additional challenge for small church leaders?
I don't I mean, my temptation is to say, yes, it's so hard for us. But reality, I have worked in a fairly large church and used the same curriculum there that I use in my small church. And there might be a little more on my end now, but I think that's more because I do more by myself. Where at the bigger church, I had more people that were helping. But I think curriculum is so generic, and I think it really should be. I think it has to be because they're trying to reach a broad audience. But I think big church, small church, urban church, rural church, suburban church, wherever your context is, you're going to have to spend time editing your curriculum. So that's not something that I think is a huge deal. I will say, you know, anytime there's an activity that needs, say, 5 or 6 volunteers in a big church, they need 5 or 6 volunteers and they have 500 kids. That's easy to get 5 kids that are willing to step up on the stage. You're going to find 5 kids in my group. If I have 6 kids, 3 of them might not want to do it, or 5 of them might not want to do it, you know? And so, there's that give and take, but I don't know that that's a major challenge.
Okay, good. Bill, any thoughts?
I would kind of agree. And I think it's a challenge for publishers because and to create curriculum for a small church specifically may not be profitable to a certain degree. I had a thought, my biggest thing with curriculum was because it's geared, you know, so broadly based, was with the time I had trying to justify the cost of the curriculum that I thought was great.
Right.
The number of kids I had. And that became, I didn't use a certain curriculum for a while because cost, knowing I was only using a small portion of it. Those kind of things. So for me, that becomes the issue, or one of the big issues, more so than adapting it, because you always have to adapt no matter what size church you are.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with Bill on that. That was a great point, because you're talking, when you talk price per kid, some curriculums do kind of tier their pricing levels, but even still, I think when it shakes out, price per kid, we probably end up paying more in the smaller churches than bigger churches, just because of exactly what you said. And also, another thought I had while you were talking there, Bill, is gone. It's out of my head now. So wasn't that?
If it comes back, we'll get it.
It will, as soon as we turn off. That's all right.
That's okay. That's the fun part of KMC podcast.
Oh, I know what it was. I do want to say that I know that some curriculum companies, and I can't speak for all, but I can speak for the one that I use. They are starting to make those strides. My curriculum, they actually provide a small church adaption for their curriculum, which I think is one of the biggest changes they've made that benefited me in the years, 10 years I've used them. So I do think we're starting to see a shift. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that's just come from conversations like these. They heard us. So
good. Mm-hmm. Good. Okay, so a lot of people that serve in kids ministry in small churches oftentimes are working full-time outside the church, and yet we all know are putting in full-time hours inside the church as well. What do you think, you know, both of you guys have been in that situation as well. What kind of things could you say to somebody that might be listening to the podcast that's really struggling? They're feeling really overwhelmed because they see all the curriculum choices out there. They see all the conferences. They see all the conversations on Facebook groups. And they're like, I don't have that kind of budget. I don't have that kind of resource, human or financial. What could you guys say to them to encourage them and to say, here's how to get your focus back, or here's, you know, don't worry about all those things, but focus on just these things. How did you learn to kind of cope with the situation that God had you in for the time? I'm not sure who wants to go first, but I'll put it out there.
Well, I don't want to start that one off. Go. The first thing I would say is thank you, because what you're doing is incredible. And I know from experience, you don't hear that enough. So if you're serving full time and you're just finding those hours, burning the midnight oil, taking time away from your family to serve your church, you are an incredible person, and God sees that. And there are other people who see that. They may not say it enough, but they do. And so, first of all, I just want to say thank you. And second of all, understand that these people that you do see that go to 6 conferences a year and have all the fancy gadgets and have all the greatest curriculum, and they have their own team of writers, and those people are the minority. So don't compare yourself to them. In fact, many of them started where you are today, and that may be your calling someday, or where you are. And I really feel like I'm called to a small church, and that calling has not changed or wavered. And I feel like sometimes, God, I'm gonna be stuck here forever, aren't I? So you may feel that way, but that's what God's called me to. And I take a lot of solace in the calling. So don't get discontent because God's called you to something different than he's called someone else. And then as far as investing your time, the wisest way you can do it, I would say, first of all, invest your time in your own family if you have one. Because oftentimes we look at the church schedule first, and don't do that. Second of all, invest your time in partnering with other families. The Sunday morning program will always be the most important program, in my opinion, in any church. But what happens at home during the week has far greater impact. And so we need to invest our time first in making sure that's effective. And then the Sunday morning experience should gain energy and momentum from what's happening during the week. It's an ideal. It's not a reality a lot of times, but it's still where we should focus our most of our energy. So that's in my opinion. And then when it comes to the conferences and the big what to do's, go to local stuff. These are people in your demographic region. They're people oftentimes, if you're part of a denomination, there's probably denominational trainings and things. These are the people that most relate to your situation, and they're local. They might even be close enough you can go get a meal once in a while. Connect with them, because you're going to go to a conference, you're going to get a lot of great ideas that you can never use, and you're going to waste a lot of money doing it. And I like conferences as much as the next guy. I'm an extrovert to the extreme, but I would recommend the local stuff over a national conference if you have to pick.
Good. Bill, what do you think?
Yeah. You know, people on Facebook are always saying, if I can only go to one conference, which one should I go to? And then everybody lists their favorite conference, whatever it might be, from the dozen or so that are out there now. And my advice is always, if you're using a certain curriculum, if you can afford their big national conference, do that. If not, like Jared said, do something local. There are a lot of organizations around the country that is doing local conferences. And you know, the big part of conferences is networking with people. And if you go to a big national conference, you're going to meet a lot of people, and you're going to forget most of them the next week. If you go to a local conference, you're going to hook up with somebody, maybe find out they're down the street, similar situation. Then you've got somebody you can talk to when you're facing a difficult situation in the community, or whatever. There may be connections you have that you can help each other out. And I mean, I still struggle to a certain degree feeling like a second class citizen, having never served full time in kids ministry, because I would go to different workshops or conference, you know, seminars and things, and people would ask, and I'd say, I'm just a volunteer. And they're like, no, I don't feel bad because you're a volunteer. And I wasn't. I'm okay with being a volunteer industry and all. The point I was trying to make was, when you talk about doing something Tuesday afternoon, I can't do that because I've got a job, another job, those kind of things. Right. And like Jared said, it's knowing your calling. It's knowing your place. Because, yeah, I would love to be in a full-time position in a church with 100 or 200 kids. You know, that I'm leading. But realistically, that door hasn't opened. And I'm able to reach out to 10 or 12 kids at a time. The one thing I always try to tell the kidman leader in a small church is church. That's where I'm going. I mean, my large group is my small group.
Right.
A small number. You're reaching that every week. You know, you're having an impact that large churches wish they could have. And God's got you there to reach those one or two kids or how many you have in a special way. You're there for a reason. And in kids ministry, because you may never know the full result of your ministry, because they grow up, they move away. And unless they come back and tell you, you may never know the impact. And it's easy to get discouraged because, like Jared said in the beginning, you don't get that pat on the back. All you get is them coming down saying, be quiet, you're too loud.
Yeah.
And so don't be discouraged by what you do. Time management is always difficult. You're going to be tired. If you want to talk, I got stories about it, how people look down at me because I didn't attend every function. And they couldn't understand. They got upset with that. And so don't be discouraged. God's doing something mighty through you to reach these kids. And don't feel bad about it. You'll get tired and just ask God for strength. That's the big thing.
Let me ask you guys, do you feel like there are in different ways some advantages to actually serving in a small church? I'll tell you why I think there are, but I want to hear from you guys first. Do you think there are some advantages of serving in a smaller church versus a larger church at times?
I absolutely think so. One, talk about the small group thing that Bill was talking about. The depth of relationships you can form with the kids in your ministry and the depth of relationships they can form with each other is something that you can cultivate so much easier. It really is easier to cultivate those relationships in the small church than it is in the big church, because it happens organically. Especially in my situation, I'm in a small town, a rural community, one school to rule them all and one class per age group, so every first grader in my town is in one class. I know all of their names because my son happens to be in that class. But what we see at the church level is, they stay the night with each other on Saturday night and they come to church together. And our goal is to make sure they're best friends with their church friends. And it doesn't always play out, but it does a lot, especially in the younger years. Because they get to see those people, not only at school, but they get to see them every Sunday too, or however often they're there. So I think that's one of the huge advantages to the small church.
And I would agree with that. In a small church, you're dealing more with people. In a larger church, you're dealing more with processes and policies. Because as you get larger, you have, like Jared said, once you pass 300 or so, you need certain things in place to make sure things run smoothly. Everybody's on the same page. So, again, it's just, for me, it's a huge benefit being able to build relationships.
Yeah. Well, good. You guys hit on one of the things that I was thinking about is, because I've served in some small churches, and my father pastored in a lot of small churches. And like Jared, I got the joy of working with my dad, so it was pretty cool. So there were some advantages. There's some disadvantages to that, but that's another podcast. Being a PK, working with a PK is kind of interesting. But I hope that somebody who's listening that serves in a small church would start to actually think about those kind of things are huge, because everybody would agree that relationships, because you both said it, building relationships and having that ability to do that really is greater and probably more effective when you're a smaller church than when you're a larger church. It's easier, and especially now that I am in a bigger church, I see the difference where it's easier for people to come and go. And for them not to be missed for a week or two, because it's big enough that, you know, people go, oh, maybe they just switch services for a week or whatever. And you can get away with that. Or, you know, those kind of things, you know, you can become more invisible, where in a small church that is noticeable. I remember serving in a small church and man, my pastor, he'd look around during worship and kind of mentally note who was missing and then call them just to make sure they were okay. They had that personal touch. And I think that's something that you lose at times with a larger staff, a larger church staff, because they are working, like Bill said, working the processes, working the policies, doing all that kind of thing, rather than, hey, I missed so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so, I need to give them a phone call today. You know, we have to go consult our church management program to see who is missing. And then we send them an automated postcard or something, you know. So good. I'm glad you guys said, because I want the small church leader to be encouraged as they listen to this podcast, saying, look, there are some huge blessings that you guys have over a large church kidmin pastor or leader. But yet, like I said, we also want to acknowledge that it is tough finding that balance. And Jared kind of hit on it, but I want to go back to that, circle back to that just a little bit. It's probably very, very challenging to balance priorities when you're a small church kid leader and you're working full time, you know, outside of the church, and trying to give full time to the church as well. What would you guys say to that person that maybe is struggling with their priorities of how do I set a priority? Because I see so many things that I need to do, and I don't have a team to, you know, to draw on. I've been in those conferences where they'll say, oh, well, you need to raise up a leader to take over this thing and be a coach. And I'm going, who do I have? I've got a bunch of people already serving. And if I pull one of them, then I just created a new hole for myself. I know you guys can relate to that feeling. So how do you help somebody balance out, you know, that those kind of challenges of priority, but also, okay, I've got my family, I've got my job, I've got ministry. How do I balance all those? How do I juggle all that? How did you set priorities, and maybe even share what your priority was? How did you categorize that? Bill, why don't you go first?
Like Jerry said before, you can't neglect your family. You make schedules, you do all kinds of things, but you don't neglect your family. And I can tell you stories. I mean, there's a story we tell. I had a youth event. We had the event planned in our basement because we were a mobile church. It was turkey bowling. And my wife wasn't feeling well, and somebody took her to the emergency room that afternoon. And she had pneumonia, bad case of pneumonia. Mm. Now, I talked to her, we talked, I had the turkey bowling. And some people, when they first hear that, get really upset. Your wife's in the hospital with pneumonia and you had turkey bowling. But we talked about it. She knew, she understood. Our kids were older. They were both there. It wasn't life-threatening. And as soon as the event was over, I went to the hospital. I even had somebody call me and say, hey, is this still on? And I said, yes. And he said, do you realize my wife took your wife to the hospital? And I said, yes. If she would have said, no, I want you here, I would have canceled it.
Yeah.
Because I told her before, if something comes up, you know, let me know. I can make sure I schedule around it, those kind of things.
And I know your wife. She probably would. So your wife probably would have whacked you a good one. If.
Yeah. If she would have done, I wasn't, she would have whacked me good. Yes.
She would have put you in the hospital.
She would. Yeah. I'd have been in the room. Yeah. I'd have been in ICU. She'd have been recovering fine. But you have to think about family and those things.
Right.
And I mean, you're always thinking about ministry. You can't stop that. You know, you're always thinking about ministry. So finding that balance is difficult. Finding that time of solitude and rest is difficult. but find a time where you can just get away and relax. I mean, for me, everybody talks about the Sabbath rest, having a Sabbath rest. And I say, when do I do that? Because I'm working 5 days a week. Sunday, I'm working, so I'm in the ministry. And Saturday, I'm preparing. So when do I get a rest? Time to take that rest with God. If you don't, your body's just going to shut down and going to make sure you get that rest. But it's difficult. Know your boundaries. You have to know what's difficult. People will get upset with you if you say no at certain times. But explain it. Create those boundaries. And just don't get carried away. Well, years ago, I made a rule for myself that I don't start anything after 9 p.m. Because I'd get there, I'd say, oh, another 10 minutes and I'll have this. I'm still working on it. I say, oh, but I'm so close. Another 10 minutes and I'll have it. And before I knew it, it was two in the morning. I had to wake up and go to work the next day.
Wow.
So at 9 o'clock, I don't start anything new. And you just have to kind of watch those kind of things and watch your schedule that you don't really push yourself harder than you're able to go.
So you've set some non-negotiables for yourself to say, you know, here's my boundaries, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Jared, how about you?
Yeah, for me, it's about establishing priorities. So obviously my relationship with God has to come first. You can't lead from a position of weakness, you know, spiritually. So you have to lead yourself first. My wife will always come second. My children will always come third, and then ministry and everything else in life comes after that. And ministry generally is the next thing. It's not always. There's seasons in my life, and I think in everyone's life. There's flexibility. But that said, my family knows that because Dad is a pastor and he has ministry responsibilities, even though they're still my priority and I still make sure that I spend time with them, there are times they have to make sacrifices. That's just part of it. And I don't feel guilty for that. And I don't apologize very often for that, because that's not a ministry thing. Even though you like to blame ministry for a lot of things. If my kids feel like they're not getting enough of my time, most of the time it's not ministry's fault. It's everything else that I've prioritized. So let me give you an example, though. My dad worked for the electric company when I was growing up. He still does, in addition to being a pastor. But my dad worked for the electric company. And because of that, he was a lineman. So if there was a storm, I knew my dad may not be home that night. I knew he may be out working. If it was a bad storm, tornado or ice storm, I knew my dad may be gone for, you know, a few days. And he worked in Iowa, so you get up in northern Iowa, you get really nasty weather that can knock power out for days. Now, for me, growing up, sure, it stunk when my dad wasn't around. One night, my dad got called out on Thanksgiving in the middle of supper. I still remember that. It was not all that long ago. But for me, other people being warm and comfortable was more important in those moments than having my dad there. And I recognize that as an important sacrifice that we made as a family because of my dad's job. And so we've tried to instill that in our children too. I'm not always going to be gone, but I am tonight as we're recording this. You know, I had to leave my kids. They're eating supper. I'm here. It's just a sacrifice, and we're okay with that, because when I am home, I'm going to make the most of that time. And before I left, I made the most of the time I had with them. So prioritize. Like I said, I put my family first. Now, when it comes to ministry specific priorities, I already kind of talked about that, but let me just say this. If you're in a small church, you have freedom to not do everything. I don't care what your pastor says. I give you the freedom to not do everything.
Thus says Jared.
Because here's why. You can't. You cannot do it. And raising up the leader to take it over and reproducing yourself, every leadership guru in the whole world, including one of my favorite, Jim Weidman, they're all going to teach you that. But when the reality and the ideal don't always match, you just have to look at things sometimes and say, at this season right now, I can't and I won't. Because here's the way I look at it. if I don't do it today, but it adds 10 years to my life and my health, then that's 10 more years that I can serve. But if I burn myself out and ruin my health and ruin my faith and all that thing, if I burn out before I'm supposed to, then what was it worth?
Right.
So for me, you cannot do everything. You cannot do everything the church down the street is doing. If they're doing a good job at it, then just let them do it. Yeah. Because there are enough people that are not serving Christ right now in your community that if they want to go to that other church, you wish them well, and you reach the ones that God has called you to reach. And, you know, that they may be looking for an entirely different program, and you may be just the person to do it.
Yeah. Go ahead, Bill. Go ahead.
Like I said, people at the church I was at didn't realize I was part-time or just really just a volunteer for the most part because of things that were done. I even had one person realize I was part-time was surprised at things that were done. Person, when they realized that, said, well, and I'm like, dude, you can't do that because I can't do everything a full-time person would do.
Right.
Patient that people put on you. And like Joe said, don't take that on. You've got limitations. And so don't let other people pile things on that they expect you to do that you just simply can't do.
I think that raises a good point, and something I think we ought to talk about is how do you clarify those expectations? Because that can be a real challenge. Because like you just said, you know, I know some amazing kid ministry people, just like you two, who, yeah, you would know by watching them that they weren't on staff full time. And sometimes we have small church kidmin people out there that have a title given to them by the church because the church sees them as almost a staff. Bill, you were even in that position where you know, they gave you the title. Mm-hmm. And so that creates an expectation. So how do you guys set clear expectations with the body when you're in a small church, whether you're working full-time for the church or part-time for the church, or you're working a full-time job and serving at the church? How do you set clear expectations?
Okay. It's difficult. I mean, I just ran the programs and ministries I felt were needed and necessary, but other ramblings come into it. And if they were trying to push an agenda or push things that they thought we should have, I would just give the reasons why I felt it, would just simply say, I don't have the time for that. And there were some things I was asked to do. I just flat out said, no, I'm not going to do it. And I did catch some pushback. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it was understood. And then another, not a staff person, but another person, you know, kind of agreed that, yeah, in that situation, they would feel the same way. So I did have somebody that had my back to a certain degree. But when I got on people, I tried to work with them the best I could, and being able to say no and explain why. I can't do that because I'm working overtime or I can't do that simply because of whatever. It's just the time or the resources just simply aren't there. So when they kind of have certain expectations, you kind of bring them down to a realization that, hey, down the street, we can't do that. Sometimes I have the Superman complex and I think I can do a lot. Sit back and wonder what happens when Superman takes off his cape. You know, when he's done great things and then you fail in one spot, how do people respond? And that's the hard part.
Yeah.
The expectation that somebody has, but that's when you realize that you just can't do it. You can't do it all, and you learn to say no and create those boundaries and things.
You know, in a small church, you may have a very, very visionary, strategic pastor, and he may have very clear expectations of what he wants the children's ministry to look like, and he may communicate those. That is not a skill set that is specifically reserved for large church pastors. but it really is required of large church pastors. And small church pastors can get by with not being as strategic at times. and I say that respectfully, so I hope you guys understand.
Yeah.
But you very well may be in a small church with a leader who is just like, hey, you're the children's person, just whatever you want to do. And the problem with that type of leader, and that's a lot how my pastor, who's also my father, is, and I love him to death. He's a great leader, but in a lot of ways, he's hands off in my departments, which I at times appreciate, but at times it's like, what do you want me to do? So in those cases, you have to be the strategic leader. But in any situation, you're going to have people who come to you with great ideas. And you have to recognize that if God has given them that great idea, then he will equip them to do it. If not, and he hasn't laid it on your heart, it's probably just a great idea that needs to be set aside. It may not be one you completely ignore. It may be a for later idea. But anytime someone comes to me and says, hey, we should do whatever, my first response is, man, I love that idea. I'm not able to lead that. I just don't have the time to do something like that. But I would love to talk about, you know, you, or if they're not a capable person, you got to keep that in mind. But generally, probably 9.5 times out of 10, just by saying that, it'll shut the conversation down. Because they don't actually want to do the work for the great idea. They want you to do all the work. And I have to think, too, I've been burned a few times. So they may be the type of person who does it once. And if you're establishing a program, when they back out last minute, the second time, guess who falls on? It falls on you. So you have to think ahead. Is this something that can just be killed if they step out? Because I cannot physically take it on. And so when it comes down to what to say yes to and what to say no to, you need to have that conversation with you and with God and with your pastor and with your spouse. You need to have that conversation before everything else gets brought up. So you're going to get opportunities to do more. You always will. So you need to know way ahead of time what you're going to say yes to and what you're going to say no to. And if you think about it ahead of time, most of the time someone comes to me with a great idea or even a job offer or whatever it is, they say, will you pray about it? And I can honestly say to them, you know, I already have, and God has confirmed other things in my life, and that's not one of them. So
that's good.
I like to be the type of person that's prayed about it before I have to stress about it. So that's just me, and that's not everybody I know. But no matter who you are, you have to be thinking ahead so you know what to say yes to and what to say no to.
Yeah, and you know, I think that circles back to what both of you said at the beginning of this podcast. You need to know your calling. I think not only do you need to know your calling, but what God called you specifically to do. What has he gifted you? You know, Jared, you and I both have the same mentor, Brother Jim, and he always comes into us, do only what you can do.
Right.
And the rest, either give it to God or give it away to somebody else and don't worry about it. And so, and Bill, you said it too, you know, having those clear expectations and learning to say, no, I can't do that. Or no, we don't have the resources, or no. And then I do have to, I want to say amen again that, yeah, when someone comes to you, and I'll even do that in my church now, somebody will say, hey, we oughta. And I'm like, hey, are you volunteering? Because that would be awesome if you want to lead this. Obviously if they're capable. You don't want to have them drop the ball the second time around. So
can I add to this conversation too?
Sure.
Just by, you know, those of us serving in children's ministry, we are, in my opinion, an extension of the heart of our pastor. Regardless of what kind of leader your pastor is, you are an extension of him or her. And so when my pastor has a good idea, no matter how good it is, it's a good idea. And I will dialogue with him about it if it needs that. But if he has an idea he wants to do, I don't care what my skill set is. I don't care what my heart is. I don't care what my focus is. in that moment, that becomes my focus. A few years ago, my pastor said, my dad, I use those words interchangeably. He said, I think I want every kid to go to camp this summer. And you need to know about me. I'm not a fundraiser. I hate fundraising. I think it's of the devil. I think my personal views on hell is that it will be a fundraising campaign. So I hate fundraising, but he said that, and I knew that this was going to require a fundraiser. And that first year I did it all. I did all the fundraising, and we sent every kid that was a regular in our church to camp that summer. And since then, people have taken on the fundraising and helped and things. But the first year, it was all on me, and it was because that was important to my pastor. And it was not something that I would have ever made a priority because I hate fundraising. But when he said it, it was a priority. And things like that have happened. Like I said, my pastor's pretty hands-off, so as far as he lets me have a lot of freedom. But when he has an idea of something he wants to do, that is, even if it's not children's ministry, doesn't matter. That is my priority until it's done and done well. So that's just a respecting your leader. I feel like if you honor your leader, that God will honor you in everything you do. So that's something I try to live by.
And from your guys' perspective, as we look at small church kid ministry, what do you need from the kingdom at large? I'm talking publishers, conference organizers, worship leaders, all, you know, resources, all those kind of things. What's missing? What's out there that if they're listening to this podcast, what would you say? Hey, you know, we, the small church kid leaders, would love to see. What would you say?
I would say we're missing our voice. And here's what I mean by that. If you go to, I've not been to every conference and I can't speak for every single one. But the ones I have gone to, I've made an effort. I've spent, for me, an enormous amount of money oftentimes to get there. And what I see is even in the quote unquote small church tracks that are starting to pop up, you get voices that aren't, they're not, I don't know, this is arrogant. It's not me. That's not what I mean. It's not my demographic in that it's people who used to be in a small church and now they're in a mega church. And 10 years ago though, they only had 8 kids and they've forgotten, let's face it. They've forgotten just how hard that was. The one time I sat in a conference session specific for small churches, how to do a family experience event in a small church. And this gal got up there. It was a good presentation, but she kind of lost me. One of the first things she said was, when we started ours, we only had $1,000 budget for our first one. And I was like, I don't spend $1,000 a year in children's ministry. Yeah. So we have a disconnect immediately. And when was the last time? And I know that I try not to be overly critical of keynote speakers because I imagine that's got to be a difficult process because you have to have so much diversity anymore. Everyone's concerned. But when was the last time anybody in a church under 1,000 was ever invited onto the main stage, any conference? Right. And again, I'm not
that's very true.
Maybe it happens, but you've got to imagine we do have some really great leaders, speakers, communicators,
yes,
strategists that are called to small churches. Some of them. Right. Not even vocationally, they're volunteering.
Right.
And so maybe not a keynote at some of your major conferences, but definitely at your smaller conferences, look for opportunities to get that great leader because as we started off with a majority of your churches, that's their background.
Right.
And big churches, they're thinking small groups right now anyway, they can learn a lot from how small churches operate. And so there's a lot of give and take in that. They can learn a lot from doing more with less. That I think we all should be good stewards of God's money, regardless of how much we have. So learning how to do more with less is something they can learn. And so those are things that, for me, if I'm looking at a list of conferences and I see one that I know, man, this guy's in a small church. He's gonna really speak to me. I'm gonna go to that conference before I pick any of the others because. For me, that's what I need. And like I said, my curriculum company, they have a kind of a small church version of the curriculum now, which I greatly appreciate. But those curriculum companies that are thinking, be thinking, will this work with three kids? Are we going to write something that won't work? Are we going to write something that someone has to completely scrap? Or are we willing to create alternatives when we want to have a different game? Are we willing to put an alternative in there and just, you know, hire someone who's, even in big cities, there are small churches. Right. You can hire someone who's a curriculum writer that serves in a small church, get their perspective. So for me, it's all about that voice. If you're in a big church, I would encourage you to talk to a small church, your community, and say these words: what can I do for you? And then whatever they throw at you, look for an opportunity to do it. They may say, man, we just need a puppet. You go, I got a closet full. Look for opportunities, because I can tell you, I am only what little success I've had in my church, I've had because of bigger churches and people, more resources than me, that were willing to invest in me at wonderful times in my ministry. So
those of us that serve in larger churches, we need to start seeking out smaller churches and saying, hey, we're having this event. Why don't you partner with us and come join our family VBS, you know, because we can do it together. I think that would be a huge thing. All right, Bill, dive in on this.
Well, it's interesting you say you should partner with other churches and stuff, because you know that, what most of you don't know is that when my pastor tasked me to like come up and have a summer camp for VBS the next summer, I partnered with Tom and another church, my small church, to have a summer camp together. And they might have 15, 20 kids, and I had 3, but that enabled us a camp program by partnering with them. So partnering with another church is huge. If you can, it's like people from a small church that only have 10 kids because they don't have that big ministry when they're doing amazing things with a small amount. And also, I think if you go to the big major conference, you probably don't have that many small churches represented, because what it, you know, when you look at $1,000 to go to a major conference, a 2-3 day conference, I've got, you know, the big expense. So I know some make it affordable, make it more economical, but even just the hotel cost. So if they can, you know, say, hey, come out and offer full scholarships, not just conference cost scholarships, for people to be involved and see a bigger picture, that would help out. But just, they said, realizing it, you go to the conferences, you walk around the resource center, you talk about the big package, and you say, but I've got 20 kids. And the first answer is, it's flexible, but they don't tell you how. You have to take the time to say, hey, this is how you can use this. You know, just break it out, and not to say just pick the parts you need. That would be huge.
There's certain companies, curriculum companies, and they offer some type of specialist, or, you know, people who you can call with questions and help you with the curriculum and stuff. But when was the last time, if there is, I'm not aware of it. A lot of times they're regional, which makes sense. But when was the last time you called a curriculum company and they said, hey, we have a small church specialist that we want to let you talk to? That is, they know how to edit this for small churches. And they'll walk you through the process of how, you know, even if it's not a full-time person, even if it's just, hey, let me connect you with this church that's about your same size, that this pastor is just killing it. I think so many times we think in regions in America, in the American church, which there is definitely regional things that happen. But in churches, the size is a huge, huge factor in how that church operates. And so we don't always think that through as well. So I just think it's conversations that we have to have moving forward.
So how can people connect up with you two? Because I'm sure I would recommend them talking to you guys both. I have great respect for both of you. So Jared, what's some ways that they can contact you?
First of all, I'm on Twitter. It's Pastor Jared M. And it's, you know, you can have my email address. It's PastorJaredM@gmail.com. Don't spam me, but email me. If you contact me either one of those places and you want to talk further, I'd definitely be interested in that. I do have an old blog that I haven't posted on for much for the last couple of years, but it's smalltownkidmen.com. You can look at some of my old stuff. And while I got the floor, I do want to say, if you're in a big church, listen to this and hear us talking about conferences and struggles, and you may go to those every year. Maybe make a point this next year to budget ahead and to call the church down the street that you know is never going to afford it and say, hey, we want to take your leader with us. and we're going to buy everything. We're going to pay for their meals. We're going to pay for their travel costs. They're going to ride with us, or however you get there, or we're going to let you stay with us. And then look for that opportunity, because I'm telling you guys, you have an opportunity to blow the socks off of someone and to really invest in the kingdom at large, because you have no idea the impact that that will have in their lives and subsequently in their ministry, their church, wherever they end up. So just a thought that came to me, and while I had the mic, I thought I'd.
Very good. That's good stuff. Good stuff. All right, Bill.
So I'm also on Twitter at Commander Bill, and you can visit my website, commandnet.net, commanderbill.com also works. And there's a contact form. You can contact me there, and I'll respond via email. Then you'll have my email address, trying to minimize spam. But yeah, just echoing what Jared said, if you're a big church listening, we're not talking bad about big churches. You've got great resources to help people. Oftentimes, small churches will help a big church if they're able to be a part of the bigger ministry. So it's kind of reciprocating. It's just building the kingdom together.
There you go.
Another way to contact me if you want to talk, a couple of conferences I'll be at coming up is CPC 17, just a few weeks away, and also the CM Connect conference, Children's Ministry Conference, cmconnect.com, I think it is. If you look for CM Connect, you'll see that the conference there. So if you want to talk in person and you happen to be there, look me up. Shoot me a direct message on Twitter or something and talk live. I'm easily accessible. I'm everywhere.
And obviously, you know, if you're part of the Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group, you can catch both of these guys on there, messaging them through there or post a question for them. I'm sure they'd be glad. And we are going to post some questions on the Facebook group because we want to keep this dialogue going. I think they've issued some good challenges, and I think there's an opportunity. If we're truly about building the kingdom, it should matter not at all what size of church. In fact, we shouldn't even be asking, you know, how big is your ministry? We should be saying, you know, how can I help serve you and how can I pray for you? Both, it should go both ways.
I agree. That's a great point, Tom, that I didn't make, and I'm glad you did. It should go both ways.
Yep, it really should. And I hope that whoever listens to this will think through what we're talking about and keep the dialogue going, because that's only going to make things better. Is if we raise our voice together and say, hey, we care. If we truly want to reach the world with the gospel, it's time for us to join arms, regardless of what we're doing as brothers and sisters. We need to make a difference and reach these kids. We've got a generation that's truly post-Christian, and it's going to become more and more challenging to catch them. So thanks for listening to this edition of the KMC, and thanks for checking us out. We hope that you'll listen again. We've got some great interviews coming up with some great leaders, Keith Farron, Mark Harper, some other episodes that'll be coming soon down the pike. So Jared and Bill, thanks. I know we're going to have you back on again because there's more we can talk about. We just have scratched the surface with this episode. So thanks, fellas. And join us again for the next episode of KMC.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Kid Ministry Collective podcast. We hope you've been informed, encouraged, and entertained for these few moments. We'd love for you to connect with us on our Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group or subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It'd also mean a lot if you'd leave a review so we can help others learn about this podcast. If you want, you can watch this episode on video on our Kids Ministry Collective YouTube page. Our goal of the KMC is from Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Join us again soon for another KMC podcast.